As we continue our series on kashering, we begin now to discuss the halachos of hagola. We know that a keli, a vessel in which something is boiled, the way to kasher it is by boiling out the bleus, the absorbed tam, in the walls of the kelim. And the shiurim we will first now begin, discuss hagola. What is hagola? Why does hagola work? When does hagola work? Before we begin even to discuss all of these very important halachas, the Berhetiv in Arachayim, Simen Tof Nun Beis, in Sifkotan Yud, at the end of Sifkotan Yud, says, Torah Haboki Bahagola Yagel. He says that only a person who is a Talmud Chacham should do the Hagola. And in fact, so does the Mishnah Berurah there in Sifkotan say, it's appropriate that the person doing the Hagola should be a Bala Torah Haboki Bedina Hagola. The person who knows the halachas ha'agola. Even though the halacha is that everybody is qualified to do agola, noshim, ktanim, nochrim, there's actually a difference in halacha between who can actually do the agola. All of the individuals we just mentioned are qualified to actually do the agola, versus people who can testify that hagola took place. A woman, an isha, not only, as we just said, is able to say, to do the hagola, an isha, a woman who's a gedola, has namonis, is trusted when she says that the hagola was done properly. It's appropriate, say the paiskim, however, given that we just said, and we'll be discussing, that there's so many details involved in doing a hagola properly, that we should make sure that when she tells us that she saw the hagola performed, we not just say, okay, the hagola was performed. We ask her, what exactly did you see? And if what she reports represents a kosher hagola, she is trusted. Certainly, say the Paiskim, that if she isn't going to do the Hagola herself, nor is she not necessarily reporting that she saw the Hagola done, but there's a place where Hagola is taking place, and we ask a woman, a Gdoila, to take vessels to be kashered, and she says, and she's trusted to do it, and she's trusted to come back and say that she did her job. An Akum, on the other hand, is somewhat different. He could do the Hagola. There is no halacha that the Hagola has to be done strictly by a Jew, but he isn't trusted that to say that he did the Hagola himself or to say that the Hagola was done. Only in a situation, say the Paiskim, that he's Mesich Lefitumai. Let's say he just reports, not even recognizing what is the import of his words and what are the ramifications of his words, then there's Machloikas HaPaiskim, if we could trust him. By Issa Doraisa, where Kaili's Treif Medoraisa, the Paiskim seem to all agree that we can't trust him even when he's a Mesich Lefitumai. If it's something that requires a Hagola only Midrabanon, as I said, there's a Machloikas HaPaiskim that if we could trust him. However, there is a very interesting tshuva from Ramosha in Chelik Yerideya, Chelik Beis of Yerideya, Simen Mem Aleph. He discusses over there, it's a very important tshuva regarding Hilchas Kashering, and there he discusses a factory which manufactures margarine. And the question over there is, the margarine could be milchig, the margarine could be not kosher. But he says that because of government regulations, the cleanup that is done at the end of the week represents a kashering. So certainly, the Paiskim suggest that where the cleanup can be independently verified by charts, in other words, if there are computer-generated charts that can't be tampered with, certainly we could trust that, and the charts indicate that there was a valid kashering, that is certainly acceptable. But even in a situation, that's not the situation Ramosha discusses in that tshuva, even in a situation that it can't be independently verified, but there are two factors that Ramosha takes into consideration. One factor he takes into consideration is that the Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah Daf Lamed says, Akum aman kerusi kapti. They're careful to keep their equipment clean. And if the way to achieve cleanliness of the equipment is through cleaning them in a method that represents a hagolah, coupled with the fact, Ramosha says, that there are government regulations, and this is Ramosha Shita and other places as well, that require them to clean the equipment in a method that represents a kashering. When we combine these two factors, says Ramosha, we could rely that on the Akum and that it should be considered a valid kashering. When it comes to Ketanim, so if, again, Ketanim are certainly capable of doing kashering, and if they're supervised, we could trust them to do the kashering. There is no rule that Ketanim have to do kashering. In a situation where the kashering is a deraisa, there the Paiskim seem to hold that we can't trust a cotton. In a situation where it's only a derabbanan diga kashering, the Paiskim seem to paskin, the Mishnah Brura, in Simen Tof Lamed Zayin Sif Dalet, says that since, as we just said, the cotton has the ability to do the kashering himself, the halacha is that where the cotton can do something himself, and it's only the rabbanon, he has nemanis to say that the kashering is done properly. It's before, as we complete this part of the shir, it's interesting that the Pardes, there was a journal of the Torah called the Pardes, and in the edition of Cheshvin Tov Shin Lamites, there's a proclamation from the Agudas HaRabbanim in that Pardes. That proclamation is actually signed by Ramosha Zatzal, and he says as follows. It says, and I read the words because they're important to read, he says, this is a ruling that was issued to make sure that kashrus is kept to the level it should be. He says, after proper investigation, after doing the investigation how kalim are, how non-kosher vessels are kashered, many times affairs take place in non-kosher, coming out of the non-kosher kitchens and hotels, and obviously before they could be used, we have to kasher the kitchen, says this proclamation, and I don't think anything has changed. We find that the Agola is not done properly. We find it that we have to announce
in order to take away something improper. In order to avoid thousands of Jews from eating non-kosher food, we want to institute the following rule. Wherever Hagolo or Liban takes place, it should be supervised by a Rav who's an expert in Hilchas Hagolo. From beginning to end, to the entire process of Hagolo, and that's how we will be able to avoid many problems. Honor of action, says this Takana. The Dorsh Mikola Gudois Yechidim, we ask all organizations or individuals, Hamataplim Bashgochas Al Kashrus, who are involved in Kashrus, Lamamish is a Takana Azois, to make this rule happen. Lushloyach Mashgich Bashas Hagolo, and to have Mashgichim be there when the Hagolo takes place. The Rav doesn't have to actually do the Hagolah, but the Rav has to make sure and supervise that the Hagolah is done properly. So now that we've established how important it is to do Hagolah properly, we can discuss the details of Hagolah. Because as we know, there are really three categories of kashering. The simplest category of kashering is just washing the vessel with cold water, washing it clean. The second level, which is the subject of our shiur, is hagola, boiling it out. And the third level is libun, actually applying fire. And we'll learn there's libun gal and there's libun chomer. As we discussed in previous shiurim, the source for the halachas of kashering are medaraisim. Because as the pasuk says, kol dover asher yover be'esh ta'aviru be'esh. Now, there's a number of ways of understanding this pasuk. One way of understanding this pasuk, that this pasuk is speaking about a situation where a vessel came in contact with fire with no liquid. A frying pan, a grill. And what the Torah is teaching us, that to weigh the kasher, such a piece of equipment, is through Liban. That's the source for Liban. Another shot in this pasuk is that the pasuk is speaking both about a keli that comes directly in contact with fire without any liquid, the frying pan, the grill that we just discussed, or the boiling pan, the pot in which we boil. And the Torah is teaching us in this pasuk that we have two ways of kashering. If it's used without any liquid, then liban is required. If it's used with liquid, then hagolah is required. And the third pshat is that the pasuk is speaking strictly about a situation of hagol. Now, it's not just that we're trying to learn pshat in the pasukim. The halachas, the way we learn pshat in these pasukim, actually is very relevant to understanding what does hagolah accomplish. And not only is it important to understand what Hagolah accomplishes, how Hagolah works, they're going to be nafkaminas and halacha by understanding how Hagolah works. There are essentially two pshatim in the Rishonim, how Hagolah works. One pshat in the Rishonim is that what Hagolah does, it has the ability of pulling out all of the blis, everything that's absorbed in the keli. In that opinion, there's actually two approaches. One approach is that what Hagolah does is it takes out all of the blis in the keli. The other approach that the Rishonim suggest is that it doesn't necessarily have the ability to take everything out. Or even better said, even if it takes out, we have to be concerned that since we're dealing with the boiling water in the pot, whatever it schleps out, there's always going to be a new bliya. But that little amount is insignificant. That's one approach in the Rishonim. The other approach in the Rishonim is that Hagolah actually accomplishes the exact same thing as Libun. Just like we know, and there are very serious halachic ramifications in this, everybody agrees that what Libun does is that it burns out whatever there is in whatever tam, whatever blia we have in the keli. And therefore, as we will be discussing in Mitzvah Shem, even though the halacha is that when it comes to Hagolah, l'chatchila, Hagolah should not be done on a keli that's a ben yoymai, that a keli that was used within the last 24 hours because of the tam that's still in that keli, and that tam is still a problematic tam if we need to kasher. It, on the other hand, if by Libun, since it's just completely burning out and causing whatever bliya there is in the walls of that keli to be wiped out, so then there's no reason that we have to wait 24 hours. And now the question is, what does Hagolah do? And we go back to what we discussed a few moments ago in understanding the Pesukim. If we say that the Pasuk of Kol HaShiyova Be'esh Taviru Be'esh is speaking either about Hagolah, the first Pshat, the last Pshat, or either only speaking about Libun, it clearly indicates to us that Hagolah and Libun work very differently. Hagolah, as we said, schleps out the Bliya. On the other hand, Libun burns out the Bliya. But if we learn, as we did in the second Pshat, that the Libun and Hagolah are both learned from the same Pasuk, that the Torah tells us that when there was liquid used, Hagolah is adequate to accomplish a kashering. And when there was no water used, Libun is required. What is the Torah teaching us? Explained the Mefarshim. That the mechanics of Hagolah and Libun are really identical. The mechanics of Hagolah and Libun are really identical. It's just that the blias that get into the pot, when there was no liquid used in using that pot, get, so to speak, deeper into the pot, and therefore the only way to get those blias out is through burning them out with a Libun. Whereas if the blias only got into the pot with liquid, so those blias aren't so deep into the pot. And since those blias aren't so deep in the pot, the halacha is that it's adequate that we should just do Hagolah. But what the Hagolah and what the Libun accomplish is exact same thing. And what is the nafkamina between these two pshatim? We're going to learn that one of the most important nafkamina, one of the most important halachas regarding Hagolah, is that if there's any dirt, and of course the halacha, when we speak about dirt, it has to be something that has some sort of substance to it, on the keli that we're doing Hagolah, then the halacha is you have to remove it. And there's a machlai, and now, if we'll say that what Hagolah does is that the Hagolah schleps out what's in the keli, so then we could say if there's something blocking that, then it can penetrate. If I would say it burns, then maybe it doesn't make a difference. Another nafgamina is if Hagolah has to be done strictly with water, we're going to discuss this, or if Hagolah could be done with other liquids. If we say that what Hagolah does is that it schleps out what bleus we have in the keli, so only water has that ability. But if it's the heat that causes whatever in the keli to be burnt, So what's the difference? What causes the heat? If it's water or a different liquid. Or another nafkamina. We're going to learn that when you kasher a keli, you have to make sure that there's 60 times water versus the keli. So that the blia that comes out should be bottled in the water that it's coming into. But that's only if we learn that Hagala accomplishes that it schleps out what's in the keli. So now we have a blia coming out of the walls of the keli that we're kashering. We don't want that blia should come into a situation where it's not bottled b'shishim and then go right back into the walls of the keli and we've accomplished nothing. So we have to make sure that there's 60 times water versus the blia. But if we say that what Hagala accomplishes is that it burns what's ever inside those walls, just because it only got nivla, it only got absorbed through liquid, Hagala accomplishes that burning, so what's the difference how much water I have? If I have hot boiling water, or as we just said a moment ago, hot boiling liquid burning out what's inside, it doesn't make a difference. As long as it could do that, it's fine. In fact, this is also a nafkamina to an issue that we discussed extensively in our last shiur. In our last shiur, we discussed the minig that we say is the minig that we said is the minig that indeed we follow, the minig of the Magnav Rom, in that says that we don't kasher a keli from milchiks to parv, from milchiks to fleishiks, or vice versa, and we spent quite a while explaining why, what, when. It could well be, say the Mefarshim, it depends how Hagala works. And because, as we actually explained, that even if we follow the opinion of the Magen Avraham, we said that's only if we're going to do the kashering through Hagala. But if we do that kashering through Libun, we quoted the opinion of the Masha, we quoted the Darkei Tshuva, that there you can kasher from milchiks to fleishiks and vice versa. Now let's understand. If what Hagala does is that it completely burns whatever blia, so it's the same as libun. And if we have a pot that has a blia of milchiks in it, let's say, and I want to be able to use it for fleishiks, so what Hagala accomplishes is it burns out every blia that we have in that pot, and that pot can be used for fleishiks. But let's understand, if we say that what Hagala does is it takes out the blia, so let's understand what happens here. We have your milchig pot. We fill it up with boiling water. It schleps out some of the blias, all of the blias that are in the walls that are milchigs. But since it's schlepping out, one of the primary concerns of Hagala is that whatever comes out, or at least part of what comes out, will go back in. So your pot is not completely free of milchiks. And since your pot is not completely free of milchiks, says the Magen Avraham, l'chatchila, don't use a pot that has some traces of milchiks for fleishiks. And therefore, says the Magen Avraham, the minig is not to do hagola from milchiks to fleishiks, or fleishiks to milchiks, and it's based that hagola is not burning out what the blia is. Hagala schleps out, and there's a concern that it also may get, at least to some small amount, reabsorbed.